Jackson will keep it on the read option. He's got it at the 40, 35, spins at the 30. He's got room, 20. Lamar Jackson, 10, 5, touchdown Ravens! Lamar Jackson with the spin, the sprint, and the score!
Reigning MVP and Baltimore Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson had a, to put it simply, mind-blowing season last year. Whichever tool he chose, his legs, his arm, his brain, defenses just couldn't stop Lamar's Ravens. But after two early postseason exits, Jackson still has a lot to prove to his doubters in 2020. Today, Dominique Foxworth explains what he'll need to do to silence his critics and finally go the distance. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, August 26th. This is ESPN Daily. Are you ready? Are you ready to record this episode, Dominique?
I thought that's what we were doing.
We are. I just wanted to make sure that you were also.
So me having a microphone up to my face and logging into this website was not enough to signal to you that I was ready to record this podcast. I was just about to tell you how I think you're a better host than Mina Kimes, but your pre-show is not as good as Mina Kimes.
Dominique Foxworth is a writer and commentator for ESPN. And he clearly was not shy about commenting on how I'm running this podcast. He also played 7 years in the NFL as a defensive back with the Broncos and Falcons and the Baltimore Ravens, which is why we invited him on today's show. So, Dominique, I truly hate to butter up your already greasy ego, but I summoned you here really to discuss Lamar Jackson, and so I did two things. The first thing I did was look up his 40 time, which was a self-reported 4.34. And then I looked up your 40 time. The internet, Dominique, tells me that you ran a 4.34.
All right. Well, unlike Lamar Jackson, I do not have an MVP trophy to show for. And I'm going to say it's because the times hadn't caught up. I was a high school quarterback. I should have stayed in position. I'd be doing what Lamar was. I don't even believe that.
But as for Lamar Jackson, Dominique, it is also fair to say that nobody bought stock in this kid faster than you. So you called him a league-changing prospect before he was drafted. You wrote about him last year when he was on his way to becoming the second unanimous MVP in NFL history. So what did you see that other people did not?
I mean, I think that he has a skill set that is transcendent, to use an overused term in sports media. I think what was more important, and you'll see in that piece that I wrote before the draft along with Mina Kimes, that we talked about how important it was that he landed in a perfect situation. And when he went to Baltimore, being that it was an organization that I played in and a city that I grew up in, I knew that that was an organization that was smart enough to build around his skill sets. But back then, people didn't really think that way. And they thought Lamar Jackson wasn't a guy who could fit. So he clearly does, or maybe he doesn't fit, but they built a team around him that would fit him, which is the way that you should do with any great player.
So looking back now on his brief time in the league so far, Lamar did face his fair share of skeptics and doubters.
Can he even be a competent NFL quarterback?
One of the most horrific performances we had ever seen.
If I'm a Baltimore Raven fan, I'm concerned.
He's got a lot to prove.
But now, Dominique, based on how his season ended last year, I can kind of feel some of those same doubts creeping up again. I mean, the Ravens scored 12 points and Jackson had 3 turnovers in that shocking divisional round loss to the Titans. So on that game first, what actually happened?
Yeah, I mean, I think Lamar didn't play his best game, but it's unfair to hang that on Lamar. And I'm sure you've heard many stats of how long it took a lot of other great quarterbacks to win their first playoff game and even make it to the playoffs. But aside from that, if you watch that game, again, Lamar wasn't perfect, but he had 6 drops. And that defense that had been stout all year was getting run all over by Derrick Henry.
Henry breaks a tackle, 30, Henry 20, Henry 10, Henry down at the 8-yard line.
And they couldn't stop anybody, and Lamar had a tip ball for interception.
In the shotgun, Jackson looks. Jackson fires down the middle, ball tipped and intercepted, Byard, 20,
And he threw one later that was probably his fault and gave up a sack fumble.
It's coming. Jackson under pressure. Grabbed, hit, fumbles. Ball is loose. There's a fight for it.
So he wasn't perfect, but I think it's unfair to hang it all on his shoulders. He threw some really impressive passes, some of which were caught, some of which were dropped. But to be this early in his career, to have as much success as he's had, I think is encouraging.
But when other defenses watch that game, what do you think they take away from it? Is there anything that these other teams are going to try and do to slow him down this year that is either inspired by the Titans or coming from an entirely different place to begin with?
No, I don't think that there is a defense that can stop this. There's familiarity, I think, will make it easier for people. But the way NFL defenses work, or any job for that matter, is you have assignments. The most you can do is kind of assign one to two people to complete a particular job, to oversimplify it to a degree. So if you assign two people to corral Lamar Jackson, obviously you're compromised in so many other places, which is why Lamar had a perfect passer rating in so many games. Because people are so concerned about his running ability that they sold out other parts of their defense. Even if you play things perfectly, you need skill set to take you above and beyond, which there's no scheme that makes guys able to tackle a 4-3 athlete with great agility who can get away from anybody in open field repeatedly.
So if you were scheming a defense to stop Lamar, Dominique, what would you recommend?
First, prayer. I think number one, it's the most important thing, is you need some deity on your side. I'm not here to tell you which one to pray for or to pray to, but you need to pray to them, number one. But I do think that the most important thing to do is to mix it up. Try to get him confused with the coverages and what you're trying to do. Because if you look like you're going to blitz, Lamar Jackson, I think, is prepared for that. He can break one tackle, go to the house, or he can find the matchup that is to their advantage and make that pass. But I think it's important for Lamar Jackson, just like any quarterback, to make them read the coverage in the course of the play and to make them think. Frankly, it slows everyone down, and Lamar Jackson is no different in that way.
So in an attempt to figure out how to slow down Lamar Jackson, there was this great story last season about teams hiring Lamar Jackson impersonators in practice, these really fast dual threat quarterbacks, for the sole purpose of preparing to defend him, which always struck me as like hiring a James Brown impersonator for a birthday party. Like, no matter how good they are, it's inevitably kind of both sad and creepy when you try to imitate some gifts that cannot truly be replicated. But what do you think of teams trying to do that? Does that job actually make any sense?
First of all, your reference, man, you're old. Second of all, I mean that you have to, but you can't completely simulate it. But you have to throw a receiver back there or somebody back there to simulate what they're going to see on Sunday. But you're not going to see the exact same thing. So I think you try to prepare for what you're going to see. And hiring a Lamar Jackson impersonator, I think, helps. But I do think having played against Lamar for a whole year, even if you don't change your schemes, I think teams will be, and players will be, more comfortable and prepared, particularly in their division, which I think the Steelers probably played better against Lamar Jackson than anybody else. But the one thing about the Steelers that you need to understand is the point I made earlier. They got so many really special, talented players on defense. That's how you're going to have to slow down Lamar Jackson. As you saw, our best scheming coach in the history of all of football, Bill Belichick, he didn't have the players. He didn't have the athletes to match up with Lamar Jackson when they played him.
Dominique, let's say the Ravens bring you in, given all of your wisdoms, as part of an alumni personal coaching program. And I know you have a very high rate these days, but your old pal, head coach John Harbaugh, brings you in to pair you with Lamar, who is now your mentee. So entering this third season in the league, what are you telling Lamar Jackson in order to help him progress instead of regress in 2020?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to understand he is going to regress from a stats standpoint. So the first thing I tell him is, don't worry about repeating what you did last year and worry about focusing on getting better at the things that you can get better on. And I think that's intermediate to short passing. He was an impressive deep ball thrower, and he was obviously crazy efficient on fourth downs, But the one thing that's missing from his game, I would say, is consistent accuracy on the intermediate passes. And those, frankly, are passes that should be open all the time because the linebackers are terrified of that running attack. Another thing I would say is, like, talk to the media. Like, he's never given me an interview. It bothers me. But he's active on social media. Just answer a question. I'm on your team.
This went from offering wisdoms to thirsting more than any ESPN Daily guest has ever thirsted. And you know what? I support you. I support you in your quest for a sit down with Lamar Jackson. I really do.
I mean, you say that as if Lamar's going to listen to this. Lamar doesn't want to hear you.
Incredibly unfair and untrue. Lamar Jackson, if you're out there, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, then unsubscribe, then resubscribe, then unsubscribe, then resubscribe, then unsubscribe, then resubscribe, and rate and review. Thank you very much. After the break, let's talk about where things stand for the Ravens and also what the backdrop of this regular NFL season means for them.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, Dominique, I want to talk about maybe the most enormous development of the Ravens offseason, which is star Pro Bowl safety Earl Thomas getting released from the team after he swung on a teammate, fellow safety Chuck Clark, in practice. So here's what's confusing to me. After watching The Last Dance, I was told that punching your teammates is actually great leadership when it's Michael Jordan doing it. But this Earl Thomas thing is sending me real mixed signals now. So you're a defensive back. You played in the league. Is punching your coworkers not cool anymore?
It's something that happens in the NFL quite frequently, specifically in training camp. Like, training camp fights are a thing. And sometimes I've been on teams where we had two star players fight on the airplane on the flight home. Like, these are things that happen, and then there is no punishment. This suggests to me, and it seems like some evidence is coming out, that this is a lot more than just a fight. Apparently, Earl was fined a couple times for other issues pertaining to being on time. Supposedly, he was getting his car washed, so he didn't make it to the facility when he was supposed to be there. Like, there are a lot of issues that go back to the previous season with Earl Thomas. I think it's a bit disingenuous to say that he got cut because of the punch, but we also don't have the full information. And for the entire team, it seems like the leadership group of the Ravens to go up to Coach Harbaugh and say, yeah, we don't need this guy, suggested to me that there's so much more going on behind the scenes that we don't know about. He wasn't cut just because of the punch. That was just an excuse.
But hold on. How long does a fight between teammates on an airplane last? Like, how many rounds can that go before somebody or something intervenes?
Well, surprisingly, it's probably hard for it to start because of all of the chairs and the plane moving, but that also makes it hard to stop it.
Right.
And if those players are big and swinging, everybody else is like, I don't know if I want to get in there. So it went on longer than you would think.
But in terms of the leadership structure with the Ravens, so they have this deficit at safety now, theoretically. But in terms of how the leadership and culture were able to process this and then perhaps thrive despite the absence of Earl Thomas, what does that say to you about the team?
I think it's nothing new. Everyone knows that the Ravens have been one of the best run organizations, have one of the strongest cultures. And it was stable because it was Ozzie Newsome. And it seems that DaCosta is keeping it going as they're gone, and Harbaugh is keeping it going as Ozzie Newsome is gone. And I think it bodes well for that team. It's easy for us on the outside, who like our fantasy GMs, to always side with talent. And I think even real GMs tend to always side with talent. But in the long run, I think setting expectations and culture is something that will pay off in the future much more than one talented player.
So on the field, the Ravens were 14-2 last year. Where do you think they end up this season?
Yeah, I think they still win the division. They won't be 14-2 because the defense will likely regress, not just because they've lost Earl Thomas, and they did add Calais Campbell, but defenses tend to fluctuate like that. They have one of the best coverage units in the NFL, and as everyone's finally come to realize, coverage is the most important thing on a defense. And they are strong in that position. Laugh if you want. It's a fact.
I mean, it's just like hearing a lobbyist for defensive backs sell political slogans on a podcast.
My bad. It's more like hearing a lobbyist for gravity. Like, is it real or is it not real? I think it's real. So anyway, their unit will be strong in that situation, but they won't be as lucky, because to go 14-2, you have to be quite lucky. And one of the knocks against Lamar Jackson is that he hasn't shown an ability to pass the ball from behind and come back. The reason why is because they were never behind. Their offense and their team is so well integrated. Having that great defense that is leaning towards pass coverage is perfect for having a great offense that is leaning towards running the ball. It keeps the defense rested, and they get an early lead. They go for it on fourth downs, and they put their team in position to where you're going to have to throw the ball against their strength, which is their secondary. So their team is well built, but they also were somewhat lucky. And part of that luck was Ben Roethlisberger getting hurt, frankly, to not have much friction in that division. And part of that luck was Freddie Kitchens being the coach in Cleveland last year. Like, all that will change. The division will be tougher, but I think Lamar and Coach Harbaugh will figure it out.
One of the huge differences as the Ravens try to figure all that out this season is that a lot of teams in this league are not going to have fans in their stadiums. On the advice of public health experts, the Baltimore Ravens announced on August 24th, this week, that they're not going to have fans at M&T Bank Stadium for at least the initial part of the 2020 regular season. And so, Dominique, you have worked jobs where there are big invisible audiences, like on television. And you've worked jobs where there are 71,008 screaming fans, like there are normally at M&T Bank Stadium. So this all feels to me like this fascinating psychology experiment. But what impact do you think this is going to have on NFL players this season?
Yeah, I think it's different for the NFL than it is for other sports. Because every sport, we have the psychological impact that we really don't know if it exists, or we can't really quantify it. But we know that potentially some guys would play better if it's quieter, or if there aren't fans booing them, aren't fans cheering for them. And some guys might play worse. And we also know that the research suggests that referees behave differently at home on the road. And that's true across sports. But there's one thing about football that I think makes it a little bit more important. Fans actually do impact the game in a way. Like, not only do they cause false starts or cause offsides penalties, they make it really difficult to communicate, which I think bleeds all the way back into game planning the Monday before the weekend's games. That you're going to decide the type of plays offensively and defensively, the type of play packages and the amount of communication that you can do based on what team you're playing. I remember being with the Broncos in my first couple years in the league, where when we would go play the Raiders at the time, they were in Oakland, now they're in Las Vegas. They weren't very good. So we would not really alter our game plan at all, because we went in there and it was like we were practicing because it was quiet. And it was very different when we would go into Kansas City, where I remember Coach Shanahan would want to have a big play early to take the fans out of it. Like, that was an important part of the strategy. We're going to go deep early to try to quiet the fans, which will then allow the offense to better communicate. So I do think that that impact is a real one, and I'm not sure how to measure it necessarily. It's reverse for defenses. So little do you know, defensive players are very smart also, and our schemes are complicated, yes, and we do have a lot of...
You read books to completion and enjoy them?
From time to time. We have a lot of communication that goes on in the field, and it's very hard to do at home. So defensive backs who have to do a lot of communication sometimes enjoy going on the road because the opposing fans are quiet when their offense is on the field. So that's a whole nother level of communication that I think makes it easier for everyone. So maybe it suggests that we'll get a truer champ. I don't know what it suggests necessarily, but I know that it's a bigger impact on football than probably any other sport.
So another pandemic idea I wanted to walk through with you is this concept of a virtual quarterback room. I don't know if you've heard about this idea, but it's the notion that there should be a quarterback backing up the quarterback, but all remotely, like they're quarantined, almost like how the Secretary of the Interior is the designated survivor when the President of the United States gives the State of the Union. Like Tampa Bay coach Bruce Arians, for instance, is a firm believer in having another quarterback on the roster just at the ready should Tom Brady contract COVID. So, Dominique, do you think that this designated survivor quarterback makes sense for the Ravens or for any other team in the NFL?
I mean, I think it makes sense to be prepared for any potential externalities. However, if your first quarterback and your second quarterback go down, you're going to your third designated survivor quarterback. Your season's been over, bruh. Like, it's time to start looking at the draft.
How dare you insult Josh McCown, friend of the show, like that?
I love Josh. He was impressive in that playoff game last year. However, I think if the Ravens call Josh McCown because something happened to Lamar and RG3, then I think that Josh would even admit maybe the Ravens season is a little bit in jeopardy.
I was about to ask you, Dominique, would you be in my virtual ESPN Daily host room? Would you be my designated survivor? But now, honestly, I don't know if I want you in that virtual room. My trust feels a little broken.
I'm sorry. Well, I would say that even if your trust wasn't broken, you don't want me in that room because I, no disrespect to Josh McCown, but I'm not Josh McCown when it comes to hosting the Daily. I'm just saying. The fans might be clamoring. There might be a whole little cult for the backup QB. That thing might start happening to you. So don't bring it on yourself, Pablo. Do not bring it on yourself.
You know, you started your answer buttering up my ego, but as always, it ended up just lathering all sorts of margarine on yours. Dominique, thank you very much for joining us, and please leave.
Bye, Pablo. I love you.
I love you, too. Coming up, players in the NBA bubble start to look at what to do next when taking a knee isn't enough.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Here's another story I'd like you to know. The Milwaukee Bucks play today, up 3-1, with a chance to knock the Orlando Magic out of the NBA bubble. But that's not what Bucks guard George Hill wants you to pay attention to right now.
I don't think we should even be talking about basketball today. We just talk about the Blake family. First of all, we shouldn't even came to this damn place, to be honest. I think coming here just took all the focal points off of what the issues are.
The inspiration for Hill's unfiltered and unsparing honesty is what happened to a 29-year-old black man named Jacob Blake, just 40 miles away from where the Bucks play in Milwaukee. A now viral video shows police in Kenosha, Wisconsin, firing more than a half dozen rounds into Blake's back at point-blank range as he tries to enter his parked SUV. Blake's three sons, ages 3, 5, and 8, were in the back seat, and they saw it all, as did several witnesses who told local reporters that Blake had been trying to break up a fight when three officers trained their sights on him. You can hear some of those witnesses screaming in the background of the video, a sound I find too haunting to even play for you now. But the whole scene and the larger context of this moment is why LeBron James told reporters this.
Quite frankly, it's just f***ed up. I know people get tired of hearing me say it, but we are scared as Black people in America. Black men, Black women, Black kids, we are terrified.
And it's why Chris Paul's victorious on-court interview this week sounded like this.
You know, the things that, you know, we decided to come down here to play for, and we said we're going to speak on the social injustice and the things that continue to happen, you know, to our people, it's not right. It's not right. So sports is cool, it's good and well, it's how we take care of our families, but those are the real issues that we got to start addressing.
Yesterday, Blake's father told the Chicago Sun-Times that Jacob is still alive, but paralyzed from the waist down, perhaps forever. He added that his son did not have a weapon on him, something eyewitnesses echoed too. But the Wisconsin Department of Justice is now investigating, and the officers have been placed on administrative leave. And so this familiar cycle, from before Breonna Taylor to George Floyd to Jacob Blake and on, that cycle spins again. And to be honest, maybe George Hill is right. For all the publicity that he and LeBron and Chris Paul can give Jacob Blake, maybe sports is still more distraction than spotlight. Maybe they should have never come to this bubble at all. It's a line of thinking that's being pondered right now by the Raptors and the Celtics, whose players said yesterday that they're contemplating boycotting games in their playoff series starting tomorrow. And it's the same reason why the Detroit Lions canceled their practice, wheeling out a whiteboard that said in marker, "The world can't go on." But this entire conversation does strike me as something else, too. It strikes me as such an awful, unfair burden to put on Black people, both these athletes specifically and in general. Even framing this as the choice, your job or your justice, feels like both an indictment and a distraction of its own. Because it's not George Hill's job to try and stop police from brutalizing Black people. But who can possibly blame him if the only thing he wants to do right now is try? I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.